BBC News.
Mariella Frostrup talks about some of our literary pretensions at 4 o'clock this afternoon. Open Book is in an hour's time. First on Radio 4, the classic serial, and today it's the final episode of Patrick O'Brien's The Mauritius Command, set in the early years of the 19th century. It stars David Robb as Captain Jack Aubrey and Richard Delane as the naval surgeon and spy Stephen Maturin. As Aubrey leads his small flotilla of Royal Navy ships against French forces in the Indian Ocean, he begins to learn the true extent of the brutal discipline imposed by one of the officers under his command, Captain Corbett, who's flogged his crew to the point of mutiny.
The Mauritius Command by Patrick O'Brien, dramatised in three parts by Roger Daines. Episode 3.
Sir, your petition has never before experienced such oppressive usage as we have laboured under the whole length of this our time on the East Indies station. Captain Corbett's capricious temper, on the least occasion, will cause us to be beaten with large sticks, which he has given directions to be specially made. Some men about the Nereid have been beaten 3 or 4 times a day, so that they've been incapable of doing their duty. At times, men are punished with the thieves' cat, and when the skin is broken, Captain Corbett has had salt pickle put upon their backs. Sir, we are the men of the Nereid. January the 8th, 1809, off Madagascar.
Marines, load your muskets!
Mr. Noble.
Sir?
Who is the leading man here?
Wilkinson speaks for them, sir.
What is the man that dares to say to me that he will not weigh anchor?
All of us for Calcutta!
Are you the leading man then, Wilkinson?
The company will only weigh for Calcutta, sir.
The main top's cabal does not order this ship, I do! Up anchor! Mr. Noble, put that man in irons.
Aye, aye, sir. Wilkinson, you must come below with me.
Marines, point your weapons. You see the power set against you. Humanity induces me to separate the misled from the guilty.
Wilkinson, you are ordered below.
Which I call you to witness, sir. There is no violence.
I warn you to hold your tongue. This is a very awful time. It shall not go well with you.
No, sir. But we have written to the Admiral at Calcutta. We will have redress.
I will read each man's name from the open list. You will join the officer of your watch or stay where you are and be considered a mutineer. Ackroyd, Ainley.
Shore liberty is everywhere denied. Sentries are posted about the ship to stop men from running. We're more like a prison ship than a man of war. From gunfire in the morning until sunset, the gangway is attended by a master at arms to prevent more than 2 men at a time going to the privy. So some discommode their trousers.
Admiral Bertie of the Cape says he keeps an excellent discipline.
That perhaps tells you rather more about the Admiral than about Captain Corbett.
He was made post by Nelson himself, Stephen. Stepped straight from the Bittern into Amphitrite. Lord, what I should give to have had such a step from such a man. I met Nelson the once, did I tell you, Evan?
Not above 100 times he asked you to pass the salt.
You will never understand. I believe you do it deliberately.
Captain Corbett, then.
A most zealous officer, has a considerable acquaintance with the waters off Reunion and Mauritius, a tendency to irascibility that is to be regretted.
We humbly beg that the Admiral will take this petition into his most serious consideration and grant us some redress. Either give us another captain or draft us into some other ship.
I will give you 5 minutes to reconsider, then I will fire upon you. I am not swayed from my duty. I persist in it. And you treat it with indifference and contempt. I have orders to leave Madagascar and set course for the Cape. There are two words, obey or not obey.
Beg pardon, sir. But the men are fearful of doing their duty.
Are you also their leader, Robinson?
I have been chosen, sir, by the men.
I am not fearful of doing my duty. Why are they, do they say?
On account of being flogged so often, sir.
Two-thirds of the ships of His Majesty's Navy do more duty than you are accustomed to.
Sir, if you would leave off beating the men with great sticks and take the knots out of the cat, they will go with you anywhere.
Whilst I'm in command, you will deserve and receive no better treatment.
Then they will wish for another captain, sir.
What? As the 23 that ran at La Plata have another captain? Them that forfeited the first character in the world? That of a British seaman? To become the lowest? A Spanish soldier? I will not go to Calcutta. The Nereid services are required elsewhere. First, to refit at the Cape, then we sail with a squadron to Mauritius. We are to sweep the sea of some Frenchmen! That is our duty! I wish to go home too, but I cannot have my wish. Neither can you!
I'm looking for the otter. Do you know where she lies?
Otter's paid off. A Plymouth Sound.
Terrible shortage of wood here at the Cape, sir. Otter was broke up for kindling last Wednesday week.
Do not concern yourselves, I beg. We will find her.
This is Doctor! Doctor! Get out of the way, you bugger. Dr. Maturin, sir. Bondon. Good heavens. Do you remember me?
Of course I do remember you, Bond. Yeah. Delighted to see you again. How do you do?
Oh, pretty spry, thank you, sir. Hope I see you the same. Shall I take care of this here barrel for you, sir?
It contains the surgeon of the otter, Bondon. A learned man, though somewhat original. At the moment, he is disguised in drink.
Otter, sir? Well, she come into Simon's Bay on the turn of the tide. Never you fret.
You move stiff, Barrett Bondon. I trust this is not a wound or rheumatism from the falling damp. In another man, I should say he had certainly been flogged. That can scarcely be the case with you.
It was 4 dozen at the gangway, all right, sir.
I'm amazed.
And 2 more for luck. Brass on the lock of number 7 gun. Not bright enough.
Amazed. Grieved. Let us row over to the Boadicea and I'll give you some salve.
Well, that's all right, Nurser. Thank you kindly. I was aboard of you this afternoon. You'll find the letter we wrote laying there in your cabin.
A letter? Tell.
Well, this is the way of it, sir. Me and Killick.
Preserved Killick? Is he with you?
He's a Nereid too, sir. Yes. Well, we was on the East Indies station when we heard our Captain Aubrey was afloat again. Of course, we wanted to join him.
He'd be very glad to see you. Kindest recollections of you. Both of you.
Was he, though? Well, we put in our request, sir. And we found ourselves discharged into the Nereid. Captain Corbett. But she's short-handed. Because why? Because the men run whenever they can.
So, are you afraid that Captain Corbett may not discharge you into the boats here? Nereid is not altogether a happy ship.
No, sir, she ain't. She's a shot-rolling ship. That's what she is.
Little do I know about the business of sailing, but I have learned that something is very much amiss when at night a crew starts trundling cannonballs about the deck.
Well, I'm not complaining, Marty, sir. I can take 50 lashes as well as the next man, I hope. But Killick and me want to get out before things turn nasty.
Speak plain to me, Bondon.
Well, the way they go now, come an action, maybe even a dirty night with no moon, I shouldn't give much, sir, for Captain Corbett's life.
Nereid, at the Cape, August the 13th, 1809. At 11, touring the ships of His Mauritius squadron, Commodore Aubrey came aboard.
Captain Corbett, I may say your Nereid is a most remarkable sight.
Every man jack aboard has been hard at it for your inspection, sir.
Well, you have had the Lily gilded, sir. She's perfect. I'm sure your books are in the same way.
May I press you to some of this Madeira, sir? Sweet biscuits are to your left.
Thank you, Corbett. Capital wine. You're very well found in powder and shot, I see here.
Yes, sir. I do not believe in flinging it into the ocean. Besides, your genuine recoil does so plough up the deck.
It does. And the Nereid's deck is smooth and white as a maiden's bosom. But do you not find it answers to have your men handy with the guns?
I've always engaged yardarm to yardarm when they couldn't miss it, they tried. But I need tell you nothing, close engagement, sir, not after your actions.
Still, there is something to be said for accuracy at a distance. Knocking away the enemy's sticks from a mile off, then laying athwart his hawse and thumping him.
I'm sure you're right, sir.
Oh, before I forget it, my old coxswain and former steward are aboard the Nereid. I've jotted down their names. It will oblige me extremely by having them sent over.
Certainly, sir. But I beg you will not think the least disrespect if I venture to reiterate that I'm cruelly short-handed.
So I understand. I do not mean to rob you, Corbett. You shall have more than an equal number from the Boadicea. I shall include a couple of quarter gunners. What have you there?
An unborn porcupine.
Well, there's glory for you. Now, Stephen, would you help me here?
Oh, such mildewed sheets can certainly not be a report on your inspections of yesterday.
They are letters from Sophie. She has never learned to wrap them properly in waxed sailcloth, nor to send copies in another ship.
Nor it would seem to number their pages.
I've tried to disentangle the sequence, but such dates as Friday or after church don't entirely serve. And you're a rare one for making out a secret hand.
Have you a magnifying glass? Thank you. Here I do make out that the old nonpareils had three apples apiece and that the strawberries failed.
Yes, I got that. The children have hair and teeth. Poor little souls. They will look far better with hair.
In this one, she says she is well.
Lord Stephen, it must have been clippings from their hair.
What? What?
And I blew them away. I thought it was shakings that had got into the cover.
Surprisingly well. Underlined twice. Has Sophie been ill, the soul?
You know, I think old Jarvey was altogether wrong in saying that a sea officer had no business to marry. Yet I can see what he meant. There. A little wisp.
Yes, that is surely the very hair of your children.
I should not be unmarried for the world, you know. No, not for a flag. But you cannot conceive how my mind has been going back to Ashgrove Cottage, when what I should be thinking about is getting my squadron out to sea.
Nereid, September the 7th. Lying to off Rodriguez. At 2 p.m., embarked 368 soldiers of the Honorable East India Company, Lieutenant Colonel Keating commanding. At 4, set courses, topsails and t'gants. Course, west by south for La Reunion. Ordered for punishment, Edward Hunt and Michael Purcell, 36 lashes each for straggling. George Leese, Michael Keefe and Thomas Winston, 48 ditto for ditto. Inigo Gardner, 12 for neglect. Fresh breezes and cloudy.
The dawn light on the beach is particularly beautiful, Captain Corbett.
I have not the time to admire it, Colonel. I have near 600 soldiers, sailors and marines to get into barges and cutters and away before the enemy smokes us. Mr. Noble!
Sir?
Close reef topsails and prepare the sweeps. We may need them.
Close reef topsails and sweeps it is, sir.
Nereid, September the 21st. At 5, standing in close to the Pointe des Galets, disembarked the last of our force, the wind being almost dead.
Captain Corbett.
Good afternoon, sir.
Sit, Captain. Colonel Keating speaks very highly of your enterprise.
That is very gratifying, sir.
He attributes the happy termination and ultimate success of our St. Paul mission to your management of his troops' landing. With a celerity peculiar to the gallant Captain Corbett, he says.
I've always endeavored to carry out my duty, sir.
Well, since we already have a Caroline in the service, I have provisionally renamed our capture the Bourbonnaise. But there is nothing provisional in my offering you the command of her.
Thank you, sir.
At the same time, I desire you to proceed forthwith to the Cape with my dispatches. I have no doubt that Admiral Bertie will send you straight home with them. So I will burden you, if I may, with my own personal letters.
Nothing could increase my sense of this command, sir, more than the obliging manner in which it has been given.
We released a fair number of merchant seamen from the French prisons at St. Paul. So I have manned the Bourbonnaise with something like her full complement.
May I respectfully ask to take some of my Nereides with me, sir?
I'm afraid I must request you to be very moderate. Captain Clomfort is to succeed you in the Nereide. He too will be in need of men.
I shall be moderation itself then, sir.
This is the neatest, completest little victory. The man that carries these dispatches will likely be much caressed by the Admiralty.
You have given me a plum, sir. A ripe plum. I recognize it extremely.
Well, I may perhaps then take the moment to suggest that you consider of the discipline of your new command.
Why, as to that, sir, you've relieved me of a parcel of sea lawyers and skulkers.
Your merchant seamen have been prisoners.
They will learn their duty quick enough.
Yeah, I mean they are not used to the lash, nor to starting with a rope's end, or sticks.
Starting has been customary since I've known the sea.
It is not legal anymore, sir.
What others may think of as cruelty, I believe to be efficacy. It is right and seemly that a captain be bold. To be so demands equally that he be ruthless.
You are both of these things, sir.
The wrath of the lion is the wisdom of God. You're not the first of my brother officers to recommend me to a less rigid system.
You served under Nelson himself, did you not?
I did. And let me tell you of his words to me, sir. Your conduct and perseverance merit my entire approbation. Nelson, sir, I shall prove one day the efficiency of my discipline. The most earnest desire of my heart is to fall in with an enemy of equal or superior force and make of him a charnel house. Did you serve under Nelson, sir?
No.
Have you confronted mutiny? I've faced it, sir, and I've been commended for my zeal and spirit in dealing with it.
I have done neither. It may be that I have not needed to. I beg that you will reflect upon that. I wish you joy of your new command, Captain Corbett.
How happy I am, Aubrey, to see you back at the Cape so soon.
I'm delighted to have returned, sir.
And how very well things have turned out. I sent Corbett straight home with your splendid news. You will have a gazette to yourself, I make no doubt. What a pretty ship she is too, your Bourbonnaise.
I wish our yards could turn them out like that, sir.
What matter? If you young fellows can take them ready-made, eh? 4 thumping prizes from St. Paul and 6 of little ones. And you tumbled their fortifications about their ears. Farker is cock-a-hoop about it. So far as a dry stick of a man can be cock-a-hoop.
I do not see him here, sir.
I didn't ask him. In any case, he declines all invitations. Drinks no wine and the water has rotted all the joy out of him. I thought you would rather dine with the eminent men of Cape Town.
Not to mention the beautiful women, sir.
Aye, they're all here, so long as they're white. Arker is plotting for your next mouthful, Aubrey. Once Rodriguez is reinforced, you are to take Bourbon for good and all. Or Reunion, or Il Buonaparte, as the enemy call it. Damn fools. This chopping and changing of names is typical of your foreign.
That will take 3,000 or 4,000 men, sir.
And you shall have them with the next monsoon. I'm fairly confident, too, of being able to add to your squadron. But I have to humour this Farker, I find. Not that your politicos can really be trusted to do things right themselves, you know. This Dr. Maturin, for example, what kind of a man is he?
Oh, I think Dr. Maturin is quite trustworthy, sir. No, Mr. Collins. You are not, in fact, absolutely required to marry this young lady.
Sir, she's...
Still less are you required to marry her at once.
It is true, sir. Her girdle is becoming too tight. She has shown me.
Are you sure this is a direct consequence of your attentions?
She's a clergyman's daughter, sir.
Oh, yes. We have only been at Simon's Bay a fortnight, Mr. Collins.
I have been paying her a lot of attention, sir.
Well, a fortnight is not generally counted enough in these affairs. This may yet prove only an indigestion, a pound or two of beefsteak pudding.
But what am I to say to her, sir?
Nothing, Mr. Collins. For I desire that you will not leave the ship. Wait until we come in from our next cruise.
Thank you, sir.
Worry not. We shall soon be at sea again. I advise you to take this as a warning. Was you to marry every girl you play love tokens with, Boadicea would very soon come to look like the Grand Vizier's floating harem. Boadicea, June the 24th, 1810. At 8:20, stood in to La Reunion at the Grand Chaloupe in support of Colonel Keating. Troops landed from Sirius and Magicienne. Calm, lapping billows and moderate breeze.
You have a charmingly regular line here, O'Neill.
As regular as one could wish, sir. The French have made a very proper disposition of their forces.
And you have a most judicious defense.
The sailors will keep rushing forward, though, taking the enemy outworks before they're due to fall. Now, over on the right there, Fraser and his sepoys have made the prettiest set of approaches. They're only waiting for the word to charge.
Then why do you not give it, Mother of God? They have clearly outflanked the enemy. Where is your galloper?
There is a parley in train, sir.
Parley?
The political gentleman from the ship, the governor's advisor.
Dr. Maturin?
He said he must speak with a French commanding officer, so we beat a chemin and sent him across with a flag of truce. We've been waiting here ever since. Can he be quite right in the head, sir?
Oh, these politicos, you know.
He desired me to keep this shin bone for him.
Oh, yes.
Swore he would not trust it to the French for all the world.
Colonel Keating, sir.
Dr. Maturin, good afternoon to you. We were just speaking of you, sir.
This is Colonel Saint-Suzanne, who commands the French forces upon La Réunion. These other gentlemen represent the civil administration.
Votre servant, monsieur.
From a desire to avert the effusion of human blood, I have taken it upon myself to assure them that honorable terms will be granted by His Majesty's forces for a capitulation covering the whole island of La Réunion.
Certainly, sir. Messieurs, je vous prie de... De marcher ce chemin.
This is a damned poor way of being present at a battle.
Am I to infer, Commodore, that you envy an army officer?
From Colonel Keating, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Seymour. You will forgive me, Mr. Farker.
Mm.
My dear Commodore.
Your friend has disappointed us. He has done us out of our battle. As neat a battle as you could wish to see, too. The enemy has accepted the usual terms, honours of war, sidearms and baggage and so on. It is quite out of order. But if you are satisfied, please to come ashore to sign together with your obliged humble servant.
H. Keating, Lieutenant Colonel. Ha! Governor Farker, I give you joy.
Have they surrendered it, sir?
They have. Oh. And your kingdom awaits you. Or this island of it, at the least.
Africaine. At Plymouth, June the 25th. At 2 p.m., the ship's company being assembled, the captain came aboard.
My lords of the Admiralty have communicated to me your petition. I'm given to understand that a most violent prejudice has arisen against me in some of your minds.
It is not every captain that begins his new command under the guns of marines from another ship of the fleet. But you have brought that upon yourselves. You know well enough what the punishment is for mutiny. Certain it is, and sure. The man you attempted to resist is now your captain. Very well. After this, you perhaps expect I should promise not to use the cats. If you do not do your duty, I will flog you well. And so would any other captain in the fleet. I suspect you're a set of cowards, afraid of a brave man commanding you. But I intend that you should vindicate yourselves. Depend upon it, I will avail myself of a first opportunity of shoving you under the enemy's fire. Prove me wrong if you dare.
Lose not a moment, gentlemen.
Hear him.
To echo the Commodore's words, this is the moment, the first flush of victory.
Yeah, right.
With command of the sea, we may concentrate our forces to strike wherever we choose.
Ooh, yeah.
Furthermore, my colleague, Dr. Maturin, assures me that our efforts at sapping the enemy's morale upon Mauritius are more than likely to be crowned with success.
Yeah. I hope, Aubrey, this don't mean I shall be denied another battle.
No. Toil and sweat on in the hope of glory, my dear Colonel. You shall have it.
Now, far be it from me to deny patient, laborious staff work, gentlemen. We have seen its gratifying results here upon Reunion. But I must remind you that fortune is bald behind. That time and tide wait for no man.
What is this Farker telling us about fortune? Is she supposed to have the mane?
I can see if he refers to the old tag that fortune must be seized by the forelock. Once she's passed, there's no clapping onto her hair at all. She ships none above the ears, indeed.
Oh, I see. Very well put, then. I'm glad he's come to see reason. Your political gentlemen are not overmuch inclined to hurry, I find. But I wish to lose not a minute. Yes, Stephen. To get at the French before their Boulogne and Minerve return from their cruise. A 5-3 advantage must be seized by the forelock,
Parker tells me that if our second campaign should succeed as well as our first, the happy commander will assuredly be honored. Would you not like to be a baronet, Jack?
I don't know that I should much care for it. Not that I mean the least fling against men that have won a great fleet action. I mean, that is right and proper. They should be peers. When you look at the mass of titles, tradesmen, dirty politicians, moneylenders...
The wild, democratical Jacobin that you are.
My service rank is enough. I am proud of it as Nebuchadnezzar. And if ever I hoist my flag, I shall paint, "Here lives Admiral Aubrey," in huge letters on the front of Ashgrove Cottage. Perhaps I might think differently of the peerage if I had a son. A son. No, I doubt it.
Africaine, July the 3rd. 8 degrees 45 south, 78 degrees 20 east. At 10, commence punishment of George Parkinson. 36 lashes for drunkenness. Inigo Gardner, 24 ditto for unspeakable beastliness. Joshua Flynn, 24 ditto for disobedience of orders. Thomas Brown, 48 ditto for straggler. Robert Viner, 36 ditto for ditto. Richard Mason, 11 for dirtiness. Thomas Barlow, 12 for ditto.
There you are. How happy I am to see you. Another couple of hours and I should have been away from St. Paul with Keating and his men. Why, Stephen, what's amiss?
I must tell you what is amiss, my dear. Our squadron's attack on Mauritius has failed. Port Southeast is in French hands still. The Nereid is taken. Her captain, Lord Clonfert, is dead. Sirius and Magicienne are burned. By now, Iphigenia will certainly have surrendered, and our captured fortifications on the Ile de la Passe will likewise have fallen.
How came you back?
Iphigenia's launch. We had an almost perfect voyage back to La Reunion.
How did we fight?
Clonfert fought the Nereid till she was battered to a hulk.
I'm glad of it. I should be ashamed to have thought him shy.
Jack, I saw blood run over Nereid's deck, not in streams, but in a sheet. I regret to say our other ships grounded in the shallows and were unable to acquit themselves as they should have.
Well, it seems they have the upper hand. Minerve, Boulogne, Astrée, Venus, Manche, and now Nereid and Iphigenia. Seven. And we have Boadicea. One. Oh, well, Stephen. We have seen longer odds, you and I.
My dear Captain Corbett, I cannot tell you how much of a relief it is to welcome you to Réunion.
I had orders that the Africaine under my command was to proceed to Madras. There I was to have embarked the forces necessary for our planned invasion of the Mauritius.
Ah, yes, the plan.
Taking water at Rodriguez, I heard of our unfortunate reversal at Port Southeast. I turned back at once.
And thank God you did, Captain Corbett. Thank God you did. No ordinary-minded man would have dared to do it. Deviate from the orders given you by the Admiralty to fly to our aid. Allow me to shake you by the hand, sir. Oh.
I conceive the plans for invasion, founded as they were upon our naval power, are somewhat upset.
It is a complete reversal. Far from our ships blockading the Mauritius, the French are now bottling up Commodore Aubrey in St. Paul's.
I spied two frigates on my way in, sir. One was the Astrée, the other appeared to be the Iphigenia.
Iphigenie, as they now call her. Oh, it's a terrible thing. As for Amelin's other frigate, heaven only knows where they may be or what mischief they may be up to.
Well, sir, Africaine is ready for battle, and you may call upon her to do her duty at any moment.
I am as relieved that you have come, Captain Corbett, as the French are dismayed. Dr. Maturin has enabled us to acquire... Here... General Decamp has dashed off a dispatch to his war ministry in Paris. He bewails the unexpected return of Captain Corbett, the soul of all the destructive attacks made upon our two islands.
One island only now, sir, and soon shall be no islands at all.
Captain Dornel de Guy of the Manche was moved to declare that he would give up all their captures were the threat of you to be removed.
It all falls into place. Fate and our own judgment present us with an opportunity that comes to few men. We shall seize it, sir, and we will not let go.
So much bedamned human activity. Philosophical great tortoises could never bear this. Hurry, hurry.
Doctor! Dr. Maturin!
Not again! True it is, a physician is never in want of patients, and yet is always in want of... patience.
Dr. Maturin, sir.
What? Thomas Pullings. Lieutenant Pullings, upon my life and honour. How do you do, sir?
I am well, I thank you, Doctor. And you?
Well.
The Commodore?
He too, Lieutenant. How are you come to St. Paul?
Well, if you chose to tip it most uncommon civil now, sir, you could hail me Captain.
You do not tell me so. Are you indeed Captain already?
That is not ashore, sir. Not Captain P by land, but... see, I am the captain of the Emma. She has brought me to St. Paul, sir. You can see her from here.
Captain Tom Pullings, upon my word.
Hey, you! The lobster there. Yes, you. Your dad weren't no glazier. We can't see through you.
There, sir. The brig just beyond the snow. Did you ever see such lovely lines?
I have seen just... not... not just such, no. Elegant she is, elegant indeed, for a transport.
A wonderful brig on a bowline, sir. Draws so amazing little water she can run up the smallest creek. She is my first command, sir. She is beautiful.
What in hell's name is going on, Mr. Pullings?
I have taken the Wyndham's guns aboard Emma, sir.
You have appropriated guns from the Honourable East India Company?
Colonel Keating has given me some company gunners and some small arms men.
And you have put them aboard a transport?
Captain Tomkinson looked into the Wyndham's condition, sir, hurricane damaged as she has been. He refuses to take her to sea in her present state.
Commander Tomkinson refuses.
Must he not be hanged, the whore? Or flogged, or at least dismissed the service?
No, Tomkinson is a poor creature, God help him. But he is within his rights. A captain can refuse a command if his ship is unseaworthy.
We went at it all through the night, sir. Shifted all Wyndham's guns into my Emma, sir.
Tom, you are a right sea officer, I am obliged to you. And I forgot to say, I'm glad to see you,
sir.
Now, if you can get 8 knots out of your Emma, before long we shall have a touch of those Frenchmen out there. I shall not object to your taking one of their frigates. Even 2. That will still leave plenty for me.
Major O'Neill has come aboard, sir.
Good morning, Major. Sit down and take a cup.
Happy to do so, sir, in 1 minute. First, I must deliver my dispatch. Verbal, sir. Mr. Farquhar had no time for pen and ink. His compliments to Commodore Aubrey, and HMS Africaine is in Saint-Denis. Captain Corbett.
Corbett? Robert Corbett?
I believe so, sir. A little man looks rather black and cross when put out.
That is the man, I make no doubt.
The same that was here before. Splendid disciplinarian.
Captain Corbett, then?
He was proceeding to Madras, sir, when he heard of the state of affairs here, so he turned off to Reunion. He charges me to say, with his duty, that 2 French frigates and a brig are coming after him into Saint-Denis, that he is clearing for action and will put to sea in a moment.
Major, I am infinitely obliged to you. Tom, haste you to Emma and make all sail.
That I will, sir.
Kivik! Light along a jug of something cool for Major O'Neill. Sandwiches, mango. At once, you hear? Mr. Seymour, all hands from the yard immediately. Prepare to slip the moment they're aboard. Pass the word for the gunner.
Mr. Dowling, pass the word for Mr. Dowling.
All hands from the yard, sir. Mr. Trollope, all hands from the yard immediately.
Mr. Johnson, signal Otter and Staunch. Proceed to sea immediately. And enemy cruising east, northeast. Mr. Dowling. How much have you filled?
30 rounds of guns, sir.
23 for the carronade. We've been at it all this forenoon.
Very well, Mr. Dowling.
May I hope to fill some more, sir, for the right true end?
I believe you may. And none of your white letter stuff, Mr. Dowling. Let the powder be all red, large grain. I wish to greet these Frenchmen with our very best compliments.
Africaine, September the 12th. At 4 p.m., hoisted t'gants and stunsails in chase of the enemy. Wind lively east by south, sea moderate. At 4:30, hoisted a broad pendant.
Broad pendant it is, sir!
Commodore Aubrey will forgive us the liberty, Mr. Jones. If it spurs the enemy to attack us, then so much the better. How far ahead do you make them to be, Mr. Tullidge?
7 or 8 miles, sir.
We shall have them in range before midnight. Where is the Boadicea?
I can see her falling behind, sir. Head on to the wind and struggling. Astern of her, Otter and Staunch, and a little odd transport. Emma, I think.
Beg pardon, sir. Mr. Parker reports we are making 9 knots.
God keep the wind. We will strike the spirits down into the hold, Mr. Tullidge. There will be no evening grog. It shall not be said that we wanted Dutch courage to thrash these Frenchmen.
Corbett is a fighting captain. He knows very well what to do. I have no doubt at all that he will do it.
Let us hope he's taught his men how to point their guns this time.
He will certainly handle the Africaine well. Capital seaman. And she is a plum, no doubt of it. French built, of course. One of the finest sailors in the Navy, particularly on a wind, which, unlike us, he has.
It's also to be hoped that he's made himself more amiable in her.
A plum sometimes has that effect upon a disappointed man. Corbett has been often disappointed.
May that not make him seek vindication?
If by that you mean laying into the French, he may seek it as much as he likes.
Lord Clonfert's wretched folly stemmed from the same source and lost us 4 frigates.
Corbett is not at all the same man.
Men of the Africaine! At this moment, we could have been snug at Madras, taking on board a parcel of soldiers and making of ourselves a mere transport. But here we are, a man of war. And there are the French. Take in the stunsails, Mr. Jones.
Stunsail is aye, aye, sir.
There is no French ship afloat in these waters that we should fear. No, nor any two together. We are to fight them in the darkness. Fight them where hard pounding, yardarm to yardarm, will bring them to defeat. Before midnight, they will be in range. There is time now to sit and rest between your guns. Tell long yarns. Appoint yourselves agents for your prize money.
God send he has not engaged close without me.
We shall take them both! Play me right for the ashtray, Mr. Parker! Stand to your guns, brave lads! Show them what you're made of! Fire as you bring them to bear! Take cool aim and throw no shot away!
The captain is down! Make a lane there! Lanterns! Lanterns here!
I have lost my foot.
Bear him up here. We will get you to the cockpit, sir.
God in heaven, his leg!
Mr. Campbell will see to you, sir.
Stick it to them, Mr. Tunbridge. Pound them into pieces.
Odysseus will soon be
up. Do not presume to tell me if we're sailing, Mr. Tunbridge. We are alone. You have your orders. They are to fight.
Mast head there! What do you see of staunch and butter?
Nothing, sir. Nothing to windward. Nothing to leeward.
The wind is freshening, sir.
The breeze that would have brought us up. Too late, Mr. Seymour!
Sir!
How does the ship?
She is withered, sir. Astray is raking us. Grape and Langridge have made it impossible to move a single yard. Every brace and bowline have been shot away. Iphigenie is broadside on. We can only bring 6 guns to bear.
What about Odysseus?
There is no hope now of being succored by her.
Very well, Mr. Tuttage. There is no alternative but to hammer away.
Sir, Mr. Parker is dead. Mr. Forder is below, a musket ball in his chest. I have 4 wounds myself. Young Jones is in sole command of the forward guns. Every officer being killed or wounded. I must ask permission to strike the colour, sir.
I will not permit it.
They have received no tarnish, sir, but we cannot go on.
For shame! Your orders are to keep them flying. My men are no cowards. Fight and go down. Fight and go down.
What will you do?
Resist the temptation to run down and engage them.
Is that temptation terribly strong?
To set us right between the two, firing both sides? I should like nothing better. But it would be criminal folly.
On deck there! Africaine's mainmast's fallen!
As if we could not see it for ourselves.
A quick, hard strike and away is allowable nonetheless. Even called for, Mr. Seymour!
Sir?
We will run down to within musket shot. When I give the order, let the starboard guns fire. Deliberate, at her stern. The smoke to clear between each shot. Then about ship,
and the larboard broadside as we go about. Mr. Buchan, lay me for the Iphigenie.
Three wounded only.
Are you hurt?
Not at all. I thank you. I've come down to look at the butcher's bill.
The splintered wings will do very well.
The breeches are covered with blood.
Oh, it's the master's. Mr. Buchan lost the number of his mess right by me, poor fellow.
Did we thump them?
They did not mean to fight. They do not choose to risk the throw. Afrikaine forced herself upon them in the dark.
So they let her go?
They have. Mr. Seymour has taken possession of her. Not that she can serve us for a time yet. She's beaten almost to a hulk.
Is there any word of her captain?
None. It is odd. Of course, the French took her officers off aboard the Astrée. But a score of Africains plunged into the sea as we bore down, swimming to us and begging to fight our guns and have another go. I wish with all my heart I could have obliged them.
Rage of defeat triumphing over the joy of deliverance.
They will have their chance. But Captain Corbett, don't know, sir. A row of lower deck dumbness. Unbreakable. Don't know, sir. I fear it is the only answer I shall ever get.
An impressive document. The empires of heaven and France at war on my study table. Were I a Catholic, it would make me extremely uneasy in my mind.
It is a tremendous damnation. Not an Irish soldier in French pay will lift a hand when he knows of this.
We should make another copy for the ministry.
I have given my solemn word, my dear governor, that only three vital men on the Mauritius shall see it, that I shall then commit it to the flames.
I regret your scruples. How I wish we could keep it. It is not every day that a pope excommunicates an emperor.
Nor every day is a pope imprisoned by one and blackguarded for a lunatic. Bonaparte has treated the Vatican infamously. This document is a beautiful thing. Very much more portable than 100 weight of gold. And very, very much more effective.
Look at them, down there in the harbour. How the Commodore does crack on slave driving, ain't it?
Well, he's got a job of work to do, ain't he? Be thankful for a signaller's hot dinner and well off out of it.
Hey, say to me, Bill, what do you make of that craft there?
Where away?
Nor-nor-east, just coming round the point. She's doused her mainsail.
Well, I can't say nothing.
Oh, what a wall-eyed, slab-sided Dutch-built bugger you are, Bill Jenkins.
She's a fisherman, can't you see? They're a pulling.
She's ain't no fisherman. And they're pulling like Doggett's coat and badge. Right into the wind's eye, like a race for £1,000.
Light along the glass, Hal. Oh, my eye. She's broke out a signal. Enemy in sight. What's red and white checker?
Due north.
Bear a hand, mate. Move your fat arse to rouse out Mr. Ballocks. I'll fix the hoist. Right. Bear a hand there.
Mr. Seymour's duty, sir. Signal station repeating from Saint-Denis. Enemy in sight, bearing due north.
Thank you very much, Mr. Johnson. I shall be on deck directly.
I beg your pardon, sir.
What is wrong with the hands, Mr. Seymour?
A rumour has spread that the Africains aboard are to man the forward starboard guns. With the utmost respect, sir, the Boadiceers wish to represent that they would find this a little hard.
Let the hands come aft, Mr. Seymour.
Thank you, sir.
Let the hands come aft!
Signal to Storch, Otter and Emma, Mr. Johnson! Where at the gun, attend to pendants motions!
Where at the gun, attend to pendants motions, sir!
Stunsails, Mr. Cannon! Well now, what a precious set of old women you are, upon my word! Clap onto a silly buzz with no truth in it,
and you set about one another like a parcel of fish bags. Eames there with a bloody nose, and on a Sunday too, for shame. And all this before we know even if the enemy is some stray sloop, or whether he will be so polite as to stay until you have stopped clawing at one another. Oh, I'll tell you what it is. I pray God we have the good fortune to come into action.
Aye.
When we do, every team is going to fight the gun it's used to. That is justice. But if any Boadicea is hurt, then an Afrikaner takes his place. And if we board, then the Afrikaners go first. 5 minutes clear to have their revenge unmolested. That's flat, and that's fair all round. Mr. Seymour, be so good as to have cutlasses and boarding axes served out to the Afrikaners.
Sir.
On deck there, sir! Three ships roll down on the larboard bow!
Should I start to clear the ship for action, sir?
It might be a little premature, Mr. Seymour. It must not tempt fate. Too many of our captains have been doing that, this mission. Mr. Seymour, the topsails and forecastles need trimming! Mr. Darling, I desire that you reload with grape! Grape! Not a shot to touch our hull! Sweep a deck, but do not touch our hull! You hear me there? Any gun crew that burns our hull will be flogged! Mr. Johnson, signal engage the enemy more closely! Mr. Hall, lay me for her bow!
A grape shot in the heart is not my idea of bliss. Indeed, I should go my utmost to avoid it.
I'm sorry for Hamelin, but a man could hardly ask for better.
I could ask very much better. Your grief does not affect your appetite, I find.
Was I a superstitious cove, I could swear that Sophie was thinking of me then.
Perhaps that is why I do not see the black dog upon you. I have so often noticed it after a battle.
Well, to be sure, we have come off scot-free or very near.
That's not to my point. The butcher's bill, the funerals, men's widows to be writing to, the mess, knotting, splicing, pumping.
But, Stephen, this dust-up is only the beginning of the re-election. We have evened the odds. They have lost their commodore, and I see no spirit in them.
Well, my dear, the thing is practically done. Mauritius is ready to fall like a ripe plum or mango.
By the end of the week, Colonel Keating and I will carry out our plan. And that will be what I call the real action. I care nothing for how glum I may grow after that.
Your Excellency, my lords, General Abercrombie, and gentlemen, we are met here today in the Governor's House of a liberated Mauritius to celebrate what I may perhaps be permitted to call an unparalleled feat of combined operations, of valour, organisation.
You and I, Aubrey, have been done out of our triumph. Done.
Will.
A pack of worthless old men who would steal the anything for a trumpery piece
so
of ribbon.
Many soldiers and sailors. Not to forget the estimable marine compliments of our own navy has called for exemplary...
What is it that you're sitting on, Stephen?
It's my precious bolster, recovered from the Nereid at last. Stuffed with the down of perhaps the last dodo in the world. It's beyond price.
I take no credit to myself.
Only a bloody baronetcy.
No, the credit is all due to a young lady in Madras.
Admiral, you have turned over two pages. You have come to the joke.
It is all due to the many corps that have made up our great enterprise. And in the commanding officers of those many corps, it has been my particular pleasure and privilege to have scriven in the assembly...
Dr. Maturin, why is it that our friend Aubrey is so basely supplanted at the 11th hour, yet takes it all so jovial? Quarters, is he merry?
Living memory.
Merry enough, Colonel Keating, sir.
Salt tears for his dreams.
Merry enough.
Flat boat bridge across the channel.
There is no one so welcome as the postman, Mr. Pullings.
You have had none then, sir, since I last saw you?
Never a word, Tom. Not for the best part of a year. And that was all out of order. For the most part, ruined.
Then I am the first. Let me wish you and Mrs. Aubrey all the joy in the world, sir.
What?
Yes, sir. Naval Chronicle. At Ashgrove Cottage, Chiltern Admiral in Hearts, the lady of Captain Aubrey of the Boadicea, of a son and heir.
Give it here.
Well, I'll be damned. God bless me! We always knew, Mrs. P and I, how you wanted a boy.
Lord! Lord! Upon my word and honour, I will be damned to hell and back again.
In the course of my long career, I have been compelled to give many orders. Some, though always for the good of the service, have sometimes been repugnant to my finer feelings. For even an admiral, gentlemen, retains finer feelings.
The damned old scrub that he is.
But now, with His Excellency Mr. Farker's permission, I shall indulge myself by giving an order more congenial to the spirit of a plain British sailor. I hereby request and require Captain Aubrey, as soon as he's finished his dinner, to repair aboard his ship, the Boadicea, hence to convey my dispatches to the Lords Commissioners of the Admiralty with all the diligence in his power. And to this gentleman, I will append a toast, filled to the brim, gunnels under, to England, home and beauty. May lucky Jack Aubrey reach them with fair winds and flowing sheets every mile of the way. To England, home and beauty.
In The Mauritius Command by Patrick O'Brien, dramatised by Roger Daines, Captain Jack Aubrey was played by David Robb, Dr. Stephen Maturin by Richard Delane, Captain Corbett, Christian Rodska, Governor Farker, David Rintoul, Lieutenant Colonel Keating, Thomas Arnold, Lieutenant Seymour, Max Dowler, Admiral Bertie, Sean Baker, Major O'Neill, Sam Dale, Lieutenant Pullings, David Holt, Lieutenant Tullidge, Lloyd Thomas, and Midshipman George Johnson, Niasha Hatendi. Other parts were played by members of the cast. The director was Bruce Young.
In a couple of minutes, a novel about trying to write a best-selling novel. Mario Lefrostrup is here with Open Book after the news.